Radio Free Palmer 89.5 KVRF presents Dog Talk Radio, hosted by Robert and Michelle Forteau. On Dog Talk Radio, we do just that. Talk dogs. Everything from introducing a new puppy into your home to the health and welfare of your canine senior citizen and all points in between. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forteau.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forteau, and you're listening to Dog Talk Radio here on Radio Free Palmer. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Dog Works Radio and send us a message anytime, and we'll make sure we answer any questions that you may have. Sitting beside me here in the studio is the co-host for Dog Talk Radio, Michelle Forteau. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's been a while since we've done a Dog Works Radio show.
It has been. We've been on a bit of a hiatus. We usually take off the month of February and March so we can cover mushing. I did a rod in particular on Mushing Radio, which is heard at this same exact time, 5 p.m. Alaska time here on Radio Free Palmer. But we are back in it. It is springtime, and we are about to talk about a big problem that is arriving here in Alaska. But before we do that, Michelle, what's happening in the dog training world here in Alaska?
In the dog training world here in Alaska, everybody is geared up for spring breakup, and for the most part, it's been beautiful weather. We've been in the 60s, and the melting is occurring fairly quickly. I know a lot of people are getting excited about getting out there and doing a lot of things with their dogs because, you know, here in Alaska, being outdoors in the midnight sun is what it's all about.
It is, and being out there with your dogs requires your dogs to have a good set of manners. Isn't that right?
That is right, and I think that people are not aware of the fact that there are some leash laws down in Anchorage that will be enforced this year. A lot of people don't know that some of the parks that were formerly off-leash parks are now becoming leash-only parks. So we need to be aware of that and keep in mind that leash laws are there to protect both you and your dog, as well as other patrons and their dogs.
There is one training program in particular that works very well for pet dogs. What is that called?
That is the American Kennel Club Canine Good Citizen Program.
And what exactly does that entail?
That entails 10 different steps, scenarios that you teach your dog to go through so that it shows that in public your dog is well-mannered, well-behaved, and under your control at all times.
And is that recognized throughout the different states, or is it pretty much just one time and you get it and it's all over?
It is, well, it's recognized throughout all the states, and it is a one-time certification. But we always recommend that people stay on their toes with that, maybe take a little refresher course here and there, give themselves a refresher course. The Canine Good Citizen is where you should start. They have a Puppy Star program for puppies, and any dog 6 months of age and older can pass the American Kennel Club Canine Good Citizen test, as well as they can register them as a title now. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. Can you give us an idea of some of the tests that they need to pass in order to become a good citizen?
Sure. They need to learn proper meeting and greeting of strangers. They need to be able to come when called, show proper leash walking, and that would be not necessarily in a proper heel position, but should not be wrapping around their owners, should not be more than 6 feet away from their owners. And, you know, one of the ones that's the hardest on the list is supervised separation, which is a stay for 3 minutes out of the sight of the owner.
Why would a person need to be away from their dog for 3 minutes, especially out in public?
You know, they might not necessarily need to be, but it shows the dog that, or shows the owners and the other people that you have such respect from your animal that you can go out of its sight and it will remain on that stay that you've placed it in. A good example would be while you're getting the dog and the kids and all of the play equipment out of the car, if you have the back hatch of the minivan open, you don't want the dog jumping out into the parking lot. That's a good place to put him on that stay.
And also a good idea is when you run into Starbucks or whatever, as you're walking your dog down the busy streets of Anchorage, you might lasso the leash, I guess, around a tree or a park bench while you run into Starbucks to grab that latte. He should be able to stay there for that amount of time without freaking out.
Yes, that is a good point.
All right, so today we're going to talk about a topic that is of great concern, not only for pet owners, but also the mini sled dog kennels that are here in Alaska. We're going to talk about ticks. And just up until very recently, there were three things here in Alaska that we did not have. We did not have scorpions, we did not have snakes, and we did not have ticks. But you can scratch that off the list now. There have been at least 10 verified cases of ticks that are up here in Alaska, and that can cause quite a problem, not only for dogs, but also livestock and non-domesticated animals, including the moose. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But, you know, growing up, Michelle, it was pretty common when we were out playing in the woods or even out in the yard that we would come home with a tick or two attached to us, and it wasn't a big deal. But up here in Alaska, it's a relatively new phenomenon, isn't it?
Well, for me personally, ticks were not necessarily a regular thing in Central California where I was growing up. I don't recall our dogs ever really having a tick problem until certain times of the year, and if we took them around our livestock, for sure they would get the ticks. When I lived in Oklahoma, ticks are a big problem in Oklahoma. When we lived in Colorado, Rocky Mountain tick there is a big problem for dogs. And Colorado, like Alaska, everybody does things outdoors. But interestingly, Colorado developed about a decade ago, the vets there recommend that you get a rattlesnake vaccine. So I'm very interested in the development of the tick infestation that is occurring here in Alaska. I think it's quite interesting. Most people thought that it's too cold up here for ticks. That is proving not to be true. There were ticks here before, but they weren't dog ticks. And the types of ticks that were here before have acclimated to the weather, so obviously it's possible for the brown dog tick and the others to come on up here and become a problem. The interesting thing is it's because of a lot of people coming up from the lower 48, even if they're just bringing their dog to do some hunting or they're moving here, however they're coming, the tick can ride on the dog all the way from the lower 48. But I'd like people to understand that you can also carry the tick with you in your clothing, your luggage, things that you didn't think that you thought were clean that really weren't clean, and the tick just kind of traveled along.
So we're going to talk about two ticks in particular today. We're going to talk about the brown dog tick and also the Rocky Mountain wood tick. And for the layperson, they probably can't distinguish between the two. You just all of a sudden see a tick buried into your skin or your dog's skin, and it gives you a little bit of the heebie-jeebies thinking, oh, my goodness, we have ticks. We got to find a way to get rid of them. But just in the last few years, even in the last few months, there have been 10 cases involving ticks in humans from North Pole, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, Valdez, Willow, and the Denali National Park. So they are...
That would be ticks in dogs.
Ticks in dogs and humans.
And humans.
So they are, at least throughout the populated areas or on the road system, so to speak, they have traveled the entire way of where folks live the most. And unfortunately, when a tick arrives here in Alaska, they're pretty tough to get rid of. And the brown tick, the brown dog tick in particular, because they prefer to live indoors. So they aren't too worried about the cold, icy winters that we have as the Rocky Mountain tick is, but it is finding a threshold here in Alaska because of climate change. And I know that's kind of a buzzword when people talk about living in Alaska and climate change, but the tick and the tick infestation is a result of that.
Absolutely agree. And just, in, you know, here in Alaska, a lot of people may not know this, but you just mentioned that the brown dog tick can live indoors. If you don't have pets, they can still find a place to live indoors in your home. They aren't necessarily carried in by mice, but they can be carried in by squirrels for sure. And what they will do is they will burrow down in your carpet and hide there until they jump on you.
That is true. And, of course, with all ticks, we always think about the two big diseases that are carried by ticks. One is Lyme disease, and the other one is Rocky Mountain spotted fever. I remember when I was a kid living on the East Coast, there was a kid, I was in about second or third grade, he contracted Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and he almost died. I remember making little cards for him, for little Johnny to get well, and he was in bad shape from that tick bite. So this is not something that you should just kind of brush under the rug, so to speak. I know Michelle just mentioned that ticks can live under the rug, but Rocky Mountain spotted fever and Lyme disease in particular, is a big problem for dogs.
Absolutely. So some tips that I know from living in tick-infested states, anytime you go outdoors with yourself or your dog, it is preferable that you do wear long pants, proper shoes with socks, etc. But after you've been out with your dog, it doesn't matter if it's been in long grassy areas or not here in Alaska, anywhere you've been with your dog, chances are it can come across these little critters. When you come back home or before you get into your vehicle even, you should take a moment, brush yourself off as if you do have ticks on you, especially down by your ankles and shoe area, back of your neck, shake out your hair, etc. But then take your hand along your dog and go from his tail to his head and run his fur in the reverse very slowly and do it a few times. And then if you come across a tick, make sure you have a set of tweezers and a way to get that tick out. Ticks will typically be on dogs in the base of the tail area, but more preferably up closer to the head, same as fleas. In the ears, behind the ears, I've seen ticks attached to the eyelids around the dog's eyes as well.
You know, what's interesting about ticks is they can switch between species. It's called zoonotic, which means they can go from dog to human to livestock, and then, of course, the non-domesticated animals such as moose. And that could pose to be a real problem up here in Alaska because, as many of us know, there are plenty of moose up here, but they have a real hard time with the winter conditions, in particular in late December, early to mid-January. Many of these moose starve to death, and some of them even freeze to death, and it could be attributed to the tick, because as they scratch, of course, they lose a lot of their hair breaks off, and then they lose quite a bit of hair, therefore they're going to have a problem staying warm. But what I found interesting in looking through the research here is a tick can suck, drink, whatever you want to call it, 40 liters of blood in a month. And that's interesting.
In 2 months.
And that's interesting because a moose only has 32 liters of blood in his body. So one single tick.
No, I think the article says that it's more than one tick.
I'm sorry, an infestation of ticks. One single infestation of ticks can kill a moose in 2 months because they can consume up to 40 liters of blood. That's a heck of a lot of moose blood. And you just think about how big a moose is and how much blood is circulating through their body. An infestation of tick can knock that moose down and kill it in just a matter of a couple of months. So this is why this is a big problem, Michelle.
Absolutely. But I need people to realize as well that that is the winter moose tick that is prevalent here in Alaska and has been prevalent here in Alaska for some time. The cases aren't as known just because it's not something that you see very often where you will actually see a moose that has been taken down by ticks. It's very noticeable and recognizable. They will have extreme hair loss. They will appear to be malnourished, and they will be very weak and disoriented.
Well, one of the reasons why is they're spending all of their time scratching. You know, if anybody has ever been bitten by a tick, they itch profusely. I've only had a couple on me at any given time, and it's like a case of poison ivy or poison oak. It really gets under your skin literally and figuratively, and you're scratching like there's no tomorrow.
Yes, and when you do remove the tick from you, you must make sure that you grab it by its head and pull out gently. That way you pull out the entire stinger, biting, whatever.
It's their head, actually.
Yeah, you want to pull that completely out. I know a lot of people will say burn it with a match and whatever, but the best way to do it is to just grab it with some tweezers and pull it out.
One thing that does work, if you do find a tick on yourself or on your dog, if you paint them with nail polish, it will require them to pull out and pull their head out of the dog or out of the skin, and it'll of course suffocate them as well. The way that the tick operates is it burrows its head down into the skin and pretty much just sucks the blood its entire life. That's its job, and of course as they do that, they're laying eggs and of course multiplying like ticks do. So it is a big problem, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's a huge concern, especially. I mean, our neighborhood alone, there's over 1,000 dogs in a square mile.
And we're going to talk about that in just a second, but there's also ways that the individual can treat ticks. I remember when I was a kid, a big way of treating ticks was every dog, cat had on a flea collar. You'd often see those white and orange collars on dogs, and they would repel the ticks and the fleas and the mosquitoes and the whole nine yards, but most people don't use those anymore. They use the single application that's often in a little tube, and you pretty much squirt a few drops of this tick treatment down their backs, and that is supposed to last for a month or two. But that brings us to the next point, the cost. This is a very expensive treatment, especially if you have multiple dogs. We just recently treated a dog for lice in our kennel, which is another very common infestation that dogs can get,
Let me say something about the lice here in Alaska. There has been an infestation of the lice attacking the dogs from doggy daycares and dog parks down in Anchorage, so people need to be aware of that situation as well. You will first notice that your dogs will have some hair loss.
You will, and it attacks them pretty rigorously, and you will see a lot of scabbing, a lot of dandruff-type conditions on your dogs, and then, of course, you will have to use that treatment. And fortunately, the treatment for both lice and ticks is the same. It is a over-the-counter treatment. Often you can find it at the big-box pet stores. You can even find it at Walmart. It costs about $35 for a large-sized dog, meaning a dog over 60 pounds. For a three-month treatment, it's about $35. So that is not too bad. It's about a $10.50, $12 treatment to treat your dogs for ticks and or lice or fleas. We don't have fleas up here. But when you're dealing with multiple dogs and you have an infestation of lice or ticks, that can become a very expensive prospect, can't it, Michelle?
Absolutely, and that is where I'm hoping that the Department of Fish and Game is going to come up with some sort of plan to thwart this infestation. I will be discussing it probably via email tonight with the Willow Dog Mushers Association, just to let all the mushers know that this is going to become a huge problem.
It will be a huge problem, and when we do talk of costs, I know that when we thought about treating our entire dog lot for the lice infestation. Fortunately, it was an isolated case. It was going to cost us over $900 for one treatment, and they recommend doing it three times or 3 months in a row. So that would be $2,700 to treat our kennel for ticks and or lice. So when you mentioned a few minutes ago that there's approximately 1,000 sled dogs within just maybe a 5 mile radius of where we live. That is a lot of money to treat ticks, isn't it?
Absolutely, and so that's the other reason is as well is they're not just going to go after your dogs. They go after cats as well, and they don't discriminate. They don't care. Cats, dogs, kids are going to be affected by these ticks the most.
Yeah, and remember we said it was a zoonotic carrier, meaning it will jump from one species to the next, and in lice in particular, I know that is kind of a separate topic, but lice, canine lice, are not zoonotic, meaning they will stay on the dog. They will not switch from dog to human, but back and forth. So it is a primary species parasite, unlike many of the tick varieties that we have up here, including the brown dog tick and the Rocky Mountain wood tick, as we discussed here. Anything else on the tick, Michelle?
Well, no. I'm wondering if we can train the mosquitoes to wipe them out, but I don't think that's going to be possible.
I wonder if there's any type of treatment or preventative for mosquitoes. When we look at our dog kennel down, in the heat of the summer, so to speak, and of course there's standing water around and many of things that will breed a mosquito, they don't seem to be too bothered by the mosquitoes, at least sled dogs.
No, I don't think the sled dogs are bothered by the mosquitoes. The biting flies are more of a problem.
Yeah, so we got all kinds of bugs that are causing problems for the dogs here in Alaska. But for folks that are just listening, which is probably the primary listening audience, yes, it's a big deal, but it is something that can be treated and prevented. You have to be diligent. You have to be on top of things. You have to know what you're looking for, because it can cause a problem not only with your dogs, but your neighbor's dogs, your kids, the livestock, and, of course, the non-domesticated animals, the wolves, the coyotes, the wolverines, everything else that makes Alaska grand. Michelle, anything else that we want to mention before we close? We have about 6 minutes left.
If your dog ends up with an infestation on its body of more than 3 ticks, I really suggest that you get it into the vet.
And they can treat it with a little bit stronger medications. There are dips and things that you can use for a very heavy infestation of ticks and or lice. But often it is something that you can treat yourself, and it's not a huge deal to get rid of. But it is a very expensive endeavor if you do have multiple dogs, as we mentioned, about a $35 3-month dose, which will pretty much eradicate the ticks and their eggs. And, of course, I guess they would be called offspring. I'm not sure exactly what a tick baby is called. I think it's called a nit, isn't it?
I think so. That sounds right.
So what else is on tap, Michelle? We have just a few minutes left.
I know that there are some upcoming dog events coming up this summer that I hope people get out and enjoy with their dogs. I know that, like I said in the beginning of our show, that they have changed some of the leash laws, and everybody needs to become familiar with those new ordinances, whether it be down in Anchorage, out here in the valley, or anywhere around the state.
There are, and I know you want to talk about a service dog tip or trick. Share us one with us, because I know that we get a lot of questions all the time about, do I qualify for a service dog? Does my family member qualify for a service dog? What are the laws or the regulations for service dogs? Can you give us just one tip on service dog etiquette or service dog training that a person may ask you on a pretty regular basis?
Well, yes, the number one question I get, it really surrounds the difference in the language. People are calling asking if they can have a therapy dog, and what they're really looking for is a service dog. And then the difference between the two is that a service dog performs tasks for you and you alone and stays with you, and a therapy dog performs with you as a team, giving love and comfort to a receiving party.
So can the person that has a service dog take that service dog to the hospital, to the nursing home, to the library, to the school, and use the commands that is learned to help that individual as a service dog, and parlay those commands or therapy type comforts to the folks in those other types of places, like we mentioned, the hospitals, et cetera?
I do not recommend that.
Why not?
It causes a lot of confusion for the dog, especially when that dog is required to do certain levels of psychiatric service, actually any service for that matter. It's difficult for a dog that is trained to perform and work for you to leave you and do a different job for someone else. It causes a lot of confusion.
So it's kind of like the plumber all of a sudden being called upon to do a carpentry job, I guess.
Exactly.
He could probably do it. I'm sure there are many plumbers out there that could do a decent carpentry job, but that's not his specialty, is it?
No, multitasking is a humanoid attribute, not a canine attribute.
So there you go. If you guys have questions, comments, or concerns about service dogs, about ticks, about training in general, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for us under Dog Works Radio, and you can find all of our podcast episodes. I believe we have close to 500 of them in our library right now. You can find those at dogworksradio.com. We have several sister shows. We have the Cyb Vibe, which talks about the Siberian Husky and all that it's about. We have our main show, Dog Works Radio. It's been on the air since 2009. We have Mushing Radio. We have Mush You Huskies, and we have the Gypsy Musher, hosted by a good friend of ours, Yukon Quest champion and perennial Iditarod contender Hugh Neff. He does the Hugh Neff show. He does the Gypsy Musher show, and he does that quite often. And then, of course, we do have this show, Dog Talk Radio, which we air right here on KVRF 89.5 here in the Matsu Valley on Wednesday nights at 5. Michelle, anything else you want to say before we close?
It's that time of year. Get out there and get busy with your dog.
So on behalf of our co-host and behalf of KVRF 89.5, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.